facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, a tremendous Tuesday to you. So glad you're with me on the Cale Clark Show. I want to talk to you. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. 1-888-914-9149. You can also email the show if you have a comment or question. Cale@relevantradio.com, Cale@relevantradio.com. We also have two Twitter accounts, not one but two. My personal account is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And we actually have a couple of great questions to get to today. The first one comes to us from a listener named Laura in Arkansas, and she asks this: why was Lucifer thrust down to earth and not into the caves of hell? I love both your shows. The Faith Explained is my favorite. Thank you for your show. Oh, thanks very much, Laura. That's really, really nice of you to say that. And I do appreciate everybody that calls in, everybody that writes in. We can't always personally respond to every email, but we do read them all, and we pray for each person. And it's really nice to get those encouraging notes. I really do appreciate all you guys. And let's look at this specific question here, because it's really interesting. Why was Lucifer cast down to earth and not straight into H-E double hockey sticks? Why not just, you know, do not pass go, just get down there? What's going on there? Well, this is a really good question. And I remember Monsignor Charles Pope wrote about this some time ago on the Archdiocese of Washington's blog. And his article was called "Why and How Does Satan Roam the Earth?" And I think his article actually answers your question in a lot of ways, because people are puzzled by the freedom, quote unquote, that Satan and demons appear to have in roaming about the earth to and fro, causing trouble. If they're consigned to hell for all eternity, then why in the world is Satan allowed to wander around the world? Isn't he supposed to be suffering in hell along with his minions and all the other tragically condemned who are there? It seems to a lot of people that he's not suffering at all, but he's having a grand old time just wreaking havoc all over the earth. So how do we answer that? How do we answer that? Well, Monsignor Pope says we've got to look at some texts in the scriptures that shed light on this. And there's a few things that are surprising that we find out. First of all, there are a lot of scriptural texts that do talk about Satan and the other demons. By the way, and don't forget, these demons are fallen angels. They were created to be good, but they disobeyed, became demons. A lot of biblical texts do talk about Satan and other fallen angels cast into hell. Here's one of them, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. When Peter writes, "God did not spare angels when they sinned, but sent them to hell, putting them in chains of darkness to be held for judgment." 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. The letter of Jude, good old Jude, whose name was probably originally Judas, and I'm not kidding about that, but he started calling himself Jude for obvious reasons. I don't want to be confused with that guy. Speaking of folks who are probably not in heaven, here's what Jude says in Jude chapter 1, verse 6. "And the angels who did not keep their positions of authority, but abandoned their proper dwelling, these he has kept in darkness, bound with everlasting chains for judgment on the great day." And that's day with a capital D, the great judgment day. So that's what Jude says. And of course, the book of Revelation. We recently looked at Revelation in our Faith Explained show series. So if you want to check that out, it's a great thing to listen to while you're driving or while you're just at home. If you want to catch up on some scripture, go to the Faith Explained series on Revelation. In Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, here's what it says. "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain. And he seized the dragon, that ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Now, there's a huge debate about what that 1,000 years means, by the way, and we dealt with that on the show. bound him for 1,000 years, and threw him into the pit and shut it and sealed it over him so that he might not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were ended. That's Revelation chapter 20, verses 1 through 3. So those are some verses. I've just given you three passages that talk about fallen angels being cast almost directly into hell. But there are other biblical verses that talk about the fallen angels, the demons, as being cast down to the earth. And this is really, I think, part of the question that Laura in Arkansas is asking. So here's where it sort of seems to suggest that they're on earth. Revelation 12, verses 8 and 9, it says, "But the dragon was not strong enough, and no longer was any place found in heaven for him and his angels. And the great dragon was hurled down, the ancient serpent called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was hurled to the earth." Note that, to the earth, "and his angels with him." Now, of course, Revelation 12 is that great passage featuring Mary. John, the Revelator, sees Mary in heaven giving birth to the Christ child. And of course, the devil tries to destroy the child as soon as he's born, attacks the other offspring of the woman, and that's, of course, her children, the members of the church. And so that's the context of that passage there. And we have Satan being hurled down to the earth in Revelation chapter 12. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. The book of Job is also an interesting text to look at when it comes to the theology of the demonic Satan. How much rope does he have here? Here's what it says in Job chapter 1, verse 7. "The Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' Satan answered the Lord, 'From roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it.'" So that's another verse that seems to indicate that he's able to roam to and fro on the earth. So again, the question that was asked by Laura in Arkansas was, why does God allow this? Why doesn't he just cast Satan and all the other demons directly into hell? So Monsignor Charles Pope looks at all these texts, and he basically says that although they are, of course, destined to be locked up for all eternity and you know, in hell forever, it does seem that some or maybe all of the demons have the ability to roam the earth as well. But we gotta really break down what that might mean, because remember, demons don't have bodies. Angels don't have bodies. They're just like the good angels don't have bodies, they're pure spirits. The same is true of demons. Fallen angels, to be sure, they don't have bodies, so they can't roam the earth the way that you and I can. They can't. Well, nobody's doing too much traveling these days, of course, in the age of COVID, but you can't just drive down to the Grand Canyon if you're a demon. You can't roam the earth the way that we do. So how do they do that? Their quote-unquote roaming around the earth is more or less indicating that they can influence people. They can influence around the earth more so than they can actually move from one place to another. Also, Monsignor Pope says that Satan and the other demons are described as being chained in prison, in darkness. We've seen some verses to that effect already. So that seems to indicate that their power is limited. Their ability to influence people, wherever they may be, is somewhat limited. It doesn't mean that they're not powerful. They're still, even though they're fallen, they still are preternatural beings with supernatural intelligence. And a lot of people ask the question, can they read your mind? Do they know what you're thinking when they're trying to tempt you? I don't think so. I'm not a demonologist by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not an exorcist, but they are very intelligent, and they know what you're doing, and they can observe your behavior. So it's not too hard to put two and two together based on what you're saying and doing, maybe about some of the ways that they might tempt you. They can figure it out. Just like social engineering. I just took this course that we all had to take about phishing scams online and very, very professional hackers that will try to do social engineering. They'll make up these fake profiles online and say, "I'll never fall for that." But some of them are so slick. They're so well done that it's easy to be tricked. Now, if that's a human who's following you around online and who knows your habits, knows what you're posting about on social media. It's pretty easy just for a human. You don't even have to be that bright. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out, oh, here's how I can get in with this person. I know what his likes and dislikes are, and I can maybe trick him online. Well, demons are way smarter than that, so they can certainly figure it out. At any rate, their power is not unlimited. And the book of Job is a great example of this, because Satan is almost presented like a dog on a chain. He's only got so much rope, so much chain to work with. And he does have some influence, but it is somewhat limited. God does put a limit on it. Now, imagine how bad it would be if they were actually off the chain, so to speak. Well, there will come a point when that does take place, just before the end. Satan is going to be really let off the hook, and he will be allowed to deceive the nations for a period of time. And at that point, you know, the Messiah is going to come. There's going to be this great cataclysmic battle. They will be definitively cast into the lake of fire, and their influence will be forever ended. Here's where it talks about that in the book of Revelation. Revelation 20, verses 7 to 10. When the 1,000 years are ended, Satan will be released from his prison and will come out to deceive the nations that are at the four corners of the earth. Their number is like the sand of the sea. And they marched up over the broad plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. But fire came down from heaven and consumed them, and the devil who had deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So at the end of the day, they do have some influence right now on earth, but it's limited. It's limited. And they're going to be let out to wreak their havoc at the end of time, but that's only a precursor to their ultimate defeat by Christ. At that point, they're going to be in the lake of fire forevermore, and we won't have to worry about them anymore. And this is why it's important to pray the St. Michael prayer. It's a very, very powerful prayer. It's an exorcism prayer that we can pray every day to keep the devil and his minions away from us. And Karen Moran just sent me a message saying that this is like a predictive text. We can ask St. Michael to cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Yeah, I mean, that is going to happen. And we need to pray that prayer. Lucas is telling me, don't tell the people, don't forget about St. Patrick's breastplate. That's also a great prayer. We've talked about that on St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, there's so many things that we could talk about with respect to that, to be sure. All right, but let's get back to this question here for a little bit. Why does God permit some demons the freedom to wander about the earth? You know, and again, it's not necessarily physical wandering, they're non-physical beings. Why is that? Well, Monsignor Pope says that don't forget that God gave freedom to all creatures. Every rational creature that he created in the universe, he gave the gift of freedom to. And that's really where evil comes from. It's a misuse of freedom. That's where sin comes from. It's a misuse of freedom. He gave the angels free will as well. They could obey him or they could not. And if our freedom is to mean anything, he says, God has to allow that there's the possibility of abuse of that freedom. Even the possibility of becoming a source of evil and a source of temptation to other people. But God can obviously work through that. And this is, again, the perspective that what Satan means to tempt, God allows as a test. And even Jesus himself was tempted. The devil tempted him. He wasn't immune from this. So he knows what it's like to go through it. And don't forget, the demons are outnumbered by a 2-to-1 ratio by the good angels. Don't forget. In Revelation chapter 12, it talks about the dragon Satan and his tail sweeping a third of the stars from heaven, casting them down. Well, that's been taken to mean that the devil convinced 1/3 of the angels, the good angels, to go with him in his rebellious plan against God. And that's, they were kicked out of heaven, they became fallen angels. But we still got 2/3 of the angels that are good. Don't forget that. So the good influence of good angels is there too. That's why it's really important to develop a relationship with one's guardian angel and never to forget your guardian angel. And we'll see on the other side of the curtain, we'll see in eternity how many jams our angel perhaps many angels have gotten us out of, the temptations that they've enabled us to stand up under. So don't forget the care of the angels too. And this is also why Monsignor Pope makes a great point here. He says that because of the fact that these temptations and trials are real in this world, when we do say yes to God, when we do say no to sin, it means something. It gives us great merit. Those choices really matter. And God sees that, and he's very proud of us when we say yes to him, because if we lived in a situation free of temptation, well, it wouldn't be as impressive, okay? It might even be harder to become, I guess it wouldn't be hard to become holy because there would be no sin, but sometimes that the fact that we have to go up against challenges in the spiritual life and sometimes even experience falling and rising again, just like a boxer getting knocked down and standing up and taking another swing at the enemy, that helps us to build spiritual character. Even our falls can be profitable to us, properly understood. Not that we're looking to fall into sin by any stretch of the imagination. It's still sin. It's still evil. But a lot of good can come of that, namely humility, that we need God's help. We can't stand on our own. We're not supermen. We're not superwomen. So here's another thing, too. Monsignor Pope also says this. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. This is a fascinating thought. I don't know if you've ever attended an exorcism. If you have, and you want to talk about it, call in 1-888-914-9149. I have not. I've read books about it. An exorcist tells his story. Father Gabriel Amorth, who was the chief exorcist of Rome. Some of you have read his books. He's got An Exorcist Tells His Story was one of them. And he had another one called More Stories from an Exorcist about his career. And one of the things that Monsignor Pope says is that anyone who has ever attended an exorcism, and I'm assuming he has, if he's going to say this, anyone who has ever attended an exorcism can attest that the demons actually suffer a great deal. It's not just we who suffer because of temptations that they're trying to proffer to us. Demons suffer when the faithful pray, when Catholics pray, when they make use of sacramentals, such as holy water. I remember in Rome seeing all these statues of these little cherubic angels sprinkling holy water on demons, and they would be fleeing away. They can't stand it. The rosary, relics of the saints, things like that, sacramentals, and also the actual sacraments. They can't stand it when Catholics receive the sacraments. Faith and love, Monsignor Pope writes, are deeply disturbing to demons. I guess he could have thrown in hope, too. Faith, hope, and love, the three theological virtues. So at the end of the day, Monsignor Pope says, you got to remember what St. John Vianney said. St. John Vianney, he may have, almost flunked out of the seminary. He may not have been academically inclined, but he was a very, very intelligent man because he was very holy. He was close to God, very saintly. And here's what he said. And he had a lot of battles with Satan in his career. He said that Satan is like a chained dog. To return to that image that we mentioned just a few moments ago, he may bark loudly and he may froth menacingly, frothing at the mouth, but he can only bite us if we get too close. He's got a loud bark, he froths at the mouth, but he can only bite us if we get too close. Keep your distance. That's what St. John Vianney said, the curé of ours. Run away. It's not cowardly to run away from sin. You've got to flee. You've got to take to your heels. That's what St. Jose Maria said, speaking about temptations of the flesh, if you will. You've got to run, just like Joseph in the Old Testament. We're looking at the story of Joseph in the Genesis series on the Faith Explained. When Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, she grabbed onto his cloak. He literally ran right out of his clothes and ran out of the house. He ran away from the sin, didn't engage with it, didn't dialogue with it. He ran. And certain times, we need to do that for sure. So don't walk around terrified. God has given you the power of being his child. You've got your guardian angel. And again, Father Gabriel Amorth, in his story about exorcisms in Rome, he mentioned St. Teresa of Avila and how she noticed that the demons she was somehow given the ability to see them. She noticed that although they looked hideous and they looked incredibly scary, they were actually terrified of her. They were terrified of her as a daughter of God, as a child of God. And she would almost just say, boo, and they'd run away in fear. So God is much more powerful. Yes, don't dismiss them. Don't take them lightly. But God is much more powerful. We need not be focusing too much on that. We got to focus on God, keep our eyes on Christ. So thank you so much for that wonderful question, Laura in Arkansas. And thank you for listening to the show. And thank you who are listening today. And if you have a question, you can call in 1-888-914-9149. I've got another really good one for you on the other side of the break. How is it that Mary can hear and help people who are invoking her in prayer, even though she's a creature? She's not God. How could she process? She got an M1 microchip from Apple. How could she process all these prayers at once? I'll tell you on the other side of the break. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Cale Clark Show.
And now, your host for the Cale Clark Show. He's 5'11". Has a good three-point shot, and is a PGA Tour wannabe. From Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, Cale Clark.
And the crowd goes wild. Wow, that is quite an intro. Unbelievable. That was the voice, by the way, of Jim Schaefer, who probably won't be working at Relevant Radio much longer. After hearing that, I'm sure some pro team is going to call him up as an in-game announcer. Wow, an incredible job. Jim Schaefer, who produces Morning Air and some of our midday programming at Relevant Radio. Wow, that's a nice touch. I think Lucas Holt set that up for me, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And the very generous listing of me being 5'11", which I told him, I must admit. And no basketball player tells the truth about how tall they are. That's for sure. That's for sure. When I was actually, I'll tell you, this is a true story. This happened to me when I was playing college basketball. They asked me, oh, you know, what's your hometown? Just like that, for the intros, you know, what's your height? And I said 5'11". And so when the guy was introducing me on the PA system, he said, you know, and now at 5'11", he actually literally said during the game, no, he's not 5'11". At 5'8", it's Cale Clark. And I'm like, 5'8"? What is that? So he totally embarrassed me in front of all the fans, and all the girls in the stands were laughing. Anyways, That was humiliating. Basketball players never tell the truth about their height. That's just something that I don't even think they have to confess that when they go to confession. Remember Allen Iverson, AI, the answer, Hall of Famer from the Philadelphia 76ers? His official height was listed at 6'1". There's no way in the world he was 6'1". If you've ever seen this guy, seen him play, never, ever was that ever believed. David Stern, who used to be commissioner of the NBA, once said, if basketball players told you their exact heights, they would have to eliminate you. It's one of the best-kept secrets in sports that they never tell the truth. But you're not allowed to do that anymore. Producer Lucas, you're not allowed to do that anymore. I don't know if you realize this, but
I did not know that.
There's a new rule that you can't do that anymore. The NBA has now standardized player heights by forcing all teams to measure their players in their heights in bare feet. Because they used to sometimes allow themselves to be measured with shoes, even. So, for example...
It's like an intimidation ploy for like your defense. Like, every side is listening to the measurements.
Oh, I think so.
That guy's tall. Oh, no, that guy's
so
tall.
So, Kevin Durant was always listed as a 7-foot-tall player. But when he was drafted, he was measured in his bare feet at 6'9". And so players for years have been using their heights in shoes to make themselves sound more impressive. Well, you can't do that anymore. Anthony Davis, a favorite player of our own Patrick Alog, who's screening calls for us today from the Lakers, he went down under the new rules from 6'11" to 6'9.75". Klay Thompson, one of the Splash Brothers from the Warriors, he's rehabbing from injury. He'll be back soon. He went from 6'7" to 6'5". So the only guy who was actually telling the truth, apparently, was LeBron James. LeBron James, he actually got upgraded with the new measurements. He used to list himself as 6'8", and when they measured him in his bare feet, he went up to 6'8.5". So
that's the way to do it. That's so, the way to do it.
How about that?
You just tell everybody you're 5 years older than you are. Like, wow, yeah. He looks great.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
Kale, they should do it in shoes, though. They play in shoes. You don't play in bare feet.
It depends how, you know, you can wear elevator shoes, you know, like thick-soled basketball lifts. Shoes. Anyways, yeah, just like you probably wear a lot of lifts, Karen, you know. I'm not, you know, being a gal.
Yeah, I kind of have to manage my heel height because Ralph and I are about, he's a few inches taller than me. But if you put on lady shoes, I'm like an Amazon person. So.
Is it kind of like Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman? Where
not that bad.
he forced her to never wear high heels because he was so short and he didn't want to look like she was more powerful than him. I don't know.
I just do it out of, you know, sort of kindness and comfort, actually.
There you go.
Kale, you know, all the announcers need to go on and say, announcing so-and-so, who used to list himself, just so they can feel your pain.
Yeah. It's like the guy, the artist formerly known
that
as Prince.
That guy was lying. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy who used to be a 7-footer, who's now only 6'9". Yeah. So anyways, yeah, that I was one of those guys, and I don't think it's lying. I don't think it's lying at all. It's like Cuban baseball players. No one knows how old they are when they come into the major leagues. They just don't know. They don't keep any records. A guy could be like in his 50s and say, I'm 22.
So, Kale, you're perpetually 30 years old then, correct?
Exactly. I'm like Melchizedek without beginning of days or end of years. Anyways, we need to move on here. I digress. I've been using oil of delay. Oil of delay. You might have heard of this product. Okay.
Oil of old lady. I use it. Yeah.
My mom used that all the time.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. So it works for me. Anyways, back to more serious questions, not about how tall I am, but can Mary hear the simultaneous prayers of millions of people at the same time? I got an email from Thomas S., who is listening on the internet. And he asks me this question. Hi, Kale. Considering Mary is not divine, and the millions of Catholics that might be praying the Hail Mary at any given time, does Mary really have the time to, quote-unquote, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death, end of quote? Does Mary have the time in eternity to do all of this? That is a very, very good question. A lot of people have this question, and maybe if you've I got a non-Catholic friend, or if you're listening to the program and you're not Catholic, and hey, we're glad that you're here. Have you ever asked this question of a Catholic? What's up with that? How in the world can Mary, and not just her, but other saints as well, how can they, when people pray to the saints, pray to Mary and the saints, how in the world can they possibly respond to all these people praying all at once? Well, first of all, I would say that we Catholics have a very unhelpful way sometimes of talking about this. When we say we're praying to Mary or praying to the saints, that's not, people say that, but that's not what they mean. I know that's not super helpful. We should just say what we mean. But maybe a better way to say it is that we're praying through Mary or praying through the saints. In other words, this is intercessory prayer. They're praying for us. We're asking them to pray to God on our behalf. Because all prayer ultimately is directed to God. But we all know what we're talking about when it comes to all that stuff, but non-Catholics hear that, and it is confusing for them. So I try really hard not to say that term, pray to Mary or pray to St. Faustina or whatever the case may be. Say pray through. Ask them to pray for you. That's what it's really all about. And a good piece that I found in response to this question actually comes from Dave Armstrong. A lot of you guys might have heard of Dave Armstrong. He's written a lot about a biblical defense of Catholicism. And he's kind of a freelance Catholic apologist, if you will. And he wrote a piece on his blog on Patheos, on the Patheos blog network, sometime last year. And it was in response to a Presbyterian pastor named Matt Slick. Now, Matt Slick, he's a slick operator, let me tell you. I had to say that just because his name's Matt Slick. But he's actually, Matt Slick is the head of the very large, you might have come across this on the internet, it's a discussion forum that's fairly anti-Catholic. It's called CARM, C-A-R-M. And he had an article on CARM saying, can Mary hear our prayers? And his answer was, of course, in the negative. But Dave Armstrong responded to some of his arguments. So this guy, Matt Slick, he said, and I quote, "There is nothing in the Bible that says that Mary can simultaneously hear the prayers of people all over the world in different languages, different spoken languages, thoughts, prayers, you know, expressed through thought. This is an attribute that only God could possess. But the Catholic Church says that she can do it. Roman Catholics all over the world offer prayers to Mary on a regular basis and expect her to hear them and intercede for them with God and Jesus. This is unfortunate because it isn't biblical. They have gone beyond Scripture," end of quote. So that was a quote from Matt Slick, a Presbyterian pastor. So how do you respond to that? How do you respond to that? Well, here's what Dave Armstrong said. He basically said, well, not every Christian doctrine or teaching has to be made explicit in Scripture. The Bible never actually says that. Where does the Bible say that every Christian teaching has to be contained in the Bible? It doesn't say that. But what you do need is that you have to make sure that your doctrine, your teachings, if you're going to claim to be the church founded by Christ, your teachings do have to be in harmony with the Bible and not in contradiction to it. And this is one thing I say all the time. I just said it the other day, there's nothing in the Bible that contradicts the Catholic faith, and there's nothing in the Catholic faith that contradicts the Bible, because the Bible was written, collated, put together by Catholics, by the church, by members of the church. So it's not in contradiction with the faith at all. So anyways, that's just a basic point. But there's nothing in the Bible, and Dave Armstrong noted that there's nothing in the Bible that denies that God could grant extraordinary qualities such as this one, the ability to respond to millions of prayers, let's say, to his creatures. And Mary is a creature. She's the greatest of all creatures, greater than all the angels, greater than you, no one but God. But she's still a creature. But there's nothing in the Bible that says that God couldn't grant such an ability to her in heaven with him. Now, we know in the case of God, of course, we all kind of know this. We all kind of sense that God, of course, can hear all kinds of different prayers at once and respond to them, no matter how many millions of people are praying at one time, because God is outside of time. He created time. He's not bound by the rules of time. And C.S. Lewis compared this to kind of like God being the author of a book. And, you know, very often you've heard that little expression, you know, history is his story. He wrote it, you know, he superintends it. So think about a human author. A human author could maybe be working on a book, go away for 2 years, and then come back, sit down, and pick up the story right where he left off. Pick up its fictional timeline as if no time at all has gone by. And really, that's how God can act with our prayers. He's not constrained by time because he's not in it. He created time. He's outside of time. Can he operate within time and space? Of course he can. He can do whatever he wants. He's all powerful. So what about the question becomes, and I think Dave Armstrong really you know, narrows it down, brings it to a fine point here. The question really is, can creatures also be outside of time or transcend earthly time in some way? When we get to heaven, when we enter eternity, is that possible? And a lot of philosophers of religion have said yes, that is possible. Why? It's all really how you look at eternity. What is eternity really? Is eternity, if you're a creature who gets to go to heaven and be with God, is eternity an endless succession of time, like a line that never, you can't see the end of it? Or is eternity merely the stopping of time as we know it from a particular point going forward? So now obviously God is eternally outside of time, but is it possible for us as creatures that once we get to heaven, once we're out of this world, is it possible that from that point onward, now we're finite beings, we were created at some point in time, but once we get into eternity, is it possible that from then on, we could also be outside of time. Is it possible? And Dave Armstrong mentioned he found this article and he wasn't able to download it because there's a paywall or something like that. But there's this article by a Dominican named Scott Steinkirchner. Scott Steinkirchner. And the article was called Time in Heaven, From Glory to Glory. Sounds like an interesting title. Well, so he was able to download the abstract of the article, and an abstract is basically like a little summary of the article. So check this out, because this is an interesting idea. I find this fascinating as well. And you're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149, if you want to call in and react to any of this. Talking about how is it possible that Mary could answer the prayers of millions of people asking for her intercession, even though she herself as a creature is not infinite like God. Well, here's what this Dominican said. And again, his name is Scott Steinkirchner. And he says this, I kind of want to raise a stein in his honor, filled with a nice German wheat beer, because this is a great idea. This is a great, really cool concept. Here's what he says. His article basically addressed three questions. Number one, is there time in heaven? That's question number one. Question number two, if so, if there is time in heaven, what is it like? And question number three, how would that relate to time in this universe? How would time in heaven relate to time in this universe? So here's what this guy says. This is really cool. This kind of blew my mind. I never thought about this before. He argues that since Christianity believes in the resurrection of the body and life everlasting, it should also affirm that, yes, there is time and space in heaven. I never thought of that before, but, you know, if there are resurrected bodies in heaven, that would mean, of course, that heaven is not a non-physical place. There are physical resurrected bodies in heaven. Of course, we know this. Jesus has ascended into heaven in his physical glorified resurrection body. Mary has been assumed into heaven, body and soul. There are other saints, perhaps from the past, like Enoch and Elijah, who have been assumed into heaven. So if there's space in heaven, there may be time in heaven. And so this guy, Scott Steinkirchner, says maybe it's better to, instead of picturing heaven as a changeless, eternal moment, maybe it's better to picture it as an everlasting experience of advancing from glory to glory. All right, and this may be too much to think about at this time in the afternoon, but he says that the time and space in heaven is not the same as the time and the space in this universe. But the relationship between space and time in heaven and space and time in this universe is shrouded in mystery. I think he's right about that. There is an element of mystery to this. We just don't know the answers to some of these questions, exactly how it works. But he sort of gives this idea. He posits this. While in this universe, time always advances in one direction, in heaven, we might be able to move both forwards and backwards in time, though always moving forward in glory. Wouldn't that be kind of cool to go forward and backward in time once we're out into eternity? I am freaking out now just thinking about this. But he says it's also possible that the saints in heaven could revisit different times on earth, making for a complex interaction between heavenly and earthly timelines that could explain how the saints in heaven can hear and respond to earthly prayers. End of quote. Wow, there's a lot to chew on there, isn't there? This idea that if you're in eternity, maybe you could kind of move backwards and forwards in time, always moving forward, of course, in glory. This is how maybe the saints can hear and respond to earthly prayers. So this could mean that it wouldn't be a problem for Mary or other saints in heaven, not only to hear our prayers, but to hear the prayers of millions and millions of other people in different times, in different places, in different states, because God gave them the ability to do so. God gave them the ability to do so in eternity. So that's something to think about, to be sure. Anyway, so this guy, Matt Slick, he's got a couple other slick little arguments here to say that intercessory prayer of the saints doesn't really work according to the Bible. So we'll talk about that We'll see what see how slick these arguments really are after this break. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. Never be the same. We'll never be the same. We go from glory to glory to glory. We're forever changed, forever changed.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back on this Tuesday. We're talking about, is it unbiblical to say, is it against truth to say that Mary can be an intercessor for us and the other saints can be as well? We're talking about this discussion that took place between Matt Slick, Protestant apologist, and Dave Armstrong, Catholic apologist. And one of the things that Matt Slick said was that the main verse, according to him, that the Roman Catholic Church uses to support this concept of Mary being able to hear our prayers is found in Revelation chapter 5, verse 8. When he had taken the book, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each one holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. That's Revelation chapter 5, verse 8. And Matt Slick says that nothing is in that verse that says that anyone can hear the prayers of the saints. It's a figurative concept, and it's not explicit. End of quote. All right, so how do you respond to that? And I remember dealing with this verse, of course, and you can look this up in our Revelation series on the Faith Explained programs. Just go through the old audio archives on relevantradio.com/faith. Actually, that doesn't take you to the Faith Explained site. It should. It should, because relevantradio.com/Cale takes you to the Cale Clark Show. But I think something else takes you to the Faith Explained. Lucas, maybe you can look that up for me. Anyways, you can look them up through the app as well, the old episodes on what we did through Revelation. I remember talking about that very, very well. Okay, so how do you deal with that question? Well, one of the things that Dave Armstrong says is that Matt Slick quotes from four Protestant commentaries on Revelation to try to make some sense of this and to get rid of the Catholic perspective on this. But even one of the commentaries that he uses, it's one by these guys, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. It's, you might have heard of this one. It's pretty well known. Even that commentary says it's a mystery. The idea that the saints are, quote, employed by God in some way unknown to us to present our prayers. Nothing is said of their interceding for us. Well, hold on here. Hold on. Even this famous Protestant commentary says that what are the saints doing in heaven here? And these golden bowls of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And that, by the way, this is why we use incense in the Mass. It's not just because we like the way it smells, although I love it. Some people hate it, especially if you have sensitivities to scents and perfumes and things like that. It can drive you crazy and maybe even be a... perhaps a health hazard. Anyways, I love it. The more incense, the better for me. I don't even want to be able to see anything. I want it to be so cloudy with incense. So that is meant to represent our prayers rising to God. And this is one of the verses in the Bible where we get this from. The book of Revelation is very liturgical. Golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. Well, hang on here. If the saints are possessing our prayers in the form of these golden bowls of incense and presenting these golden bowls to God, is that not intercession? Does that not mean that they are intermediaries on our behalf? Does this not mean that this is a way of interceding for us? Even if Matt Slick wants to say, well, there's nothing in here about the prayers, them praying on behalf of other people. Well, if they're giving the bowls full of prayers to God, what do you think that is? That doesn't seem to make any sense. And if you're only supposed to, this just doesn't say what he wants it to say. All right, so let's see what Matt Slick has to say. Just keep going on here. He goes on to say, does the text actually say that they hear the prayers? And this would be the saints holding the bowls full of the prayers of the saints. No, it does not. The saints in heaven offering the prayers doesn't mean that they can hear the prayers of people on earth. The Roman Catholic Church has read a doctrine into the text, end of quote. Well, Dave Armstrong responded to him by saying it's perfectly plausible and it's perfectly consistent to say that they heard the prayers of the people if they have the prayers, if they possess those prayers. In a sense, why can't you say they've heard the prayer? We know that saints do care about events going on earth. And one of the places where you can read about this is in the letter to the Hebrews, in Hebrews 12, verse 1. I'm just going to look that up for you. In Hebrews 12, verse 1, of course, chapter 11 of Hebrews is this great hall of fame of faith, if you will. It talks about all these great saints throughout history that are cheering us on, if you will, from heaven. Here's what it says at the beginning of Hebrews 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Now, who's the cloud of witnesses? It's all the saints who have gone before us, who have proved faithful. And they are witnesses. They are watching what's going on in the arena of life. They're like fans in the stadium, to use a sports analogy. They're watching us play the game of life, and they're cheering us on that we might be victorious. They've already succeeded. They're in the Hall of Fame. They've made it. And now they want us to get there to where they are. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So again, this athletic metaphor, running the race, they're cheering us on. It seems to imply that they know what's going on and that they're concerned for us. And they're even praying for us. I don't think that that's a stretch to say that as well. So if they're aware of what's going on, they certainly can hear our prayers and can intercede for us. Dave Armstrong mentions also Jeremiah 15:1. This is a verse that not a lot of people talk about. In Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 1, it actually says that Moses and Samuel could pray for people, could intercede for people after they died. Here's what it says, Jeremiah 15:1. Then the Lord said to me, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, yet my heart would not turn towards this people. Send them out of my sight and let them go. So it seems as if Moses and Samuel are pleading before the throne of God for these people. What about Abraham? This is an example that Jesus himself gave. Long after the death of Abraham, we talked about Abraham a lot in the Genesis series, such a key figure in that book. In the parable of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16, the rich man, he dies, he's in Hades, he's in torment, he looks up and sees Lazarus at the side of Father Abraham, and he's there. And hey, you know, can you please tell Abraham to warn my brothers? You know, well, how can you do that if you can't be involved in bringing prayer to God? So it does seem that although the saints may be dead physically, they are alive forevermore with God. They're more alive than we are because they're in the presence of God. They know what's going on, and they can pray for us. And so Mary can as well. And don't forget, too, that even though we might not understand exactly how this is happening, we certainly can say that it does happen. A great example is the letter of James, chapter 5, verse 16. The prayer of a righteous person has great power in its effects. The closer you are to Christ, the holier you are, the more your prayer has an effect. And no one was closer to Christ than Our Lady. So it would stand to reason that her prayer would have powerful effects. The Immaculate Mother of God. So, hey, but the ultimate proof is really in the pudding, to be sure. And by the way, all Protestants ask their friends to pray for them. Why would you do that? You know, these are sinful sinners like you. Why not ask the saints who are also alive? They're not dead and gone. They're alive. They're concerned about us. Ask them to pray for you. The proof's in the pudding. Try it. Pray the rosary. Give it a shot. You have nothing to lose. You've got good evidence to believe that this is the case. So why not? Try entrusting some situation in your life into Our Lady's hands and ask her to pray. We're going to go to the phones right now. Marie is on the line from Milwaukee. Marie. Oh, she just hung up. Oh, that's too bad. She had a great point. Her point was Padre Pio, she was going to say, was given the ability to bilocate. Why can't the Blessed Virgin Mary hear our prayers? There are lots of things that we can't explain from a natural point of view, but that doesn't mean that they don't happen. And that's a really good example of that, to be sure. So lots and lots of things that we could say about this. We've kind of run out of time for now, but it was a really good question. So I really, really want to thank our listener who is listening on the internet, Thomas S., for that question. Really appreciate it. If you have more, please tweet at me, at Cale Clark on Twitter. You can also email the show, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, and we'll get to them when we can. Thanks for listening today. Lucas Holt produced, Karen Moran worked social media, Patrick Alog worked the phones. He's also a little taller than he lists on the program. Take it away, Michaela. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.